the Lord will not forsake his people for his great name's sake, because it hath pleased the Lord to make you his people.
Okay. So he's not going to for the sake of is not, it is a beneficial. It's for the benefit of this. It's for the benefit of God's name. He's not going to forsake Israel. It's for the benefit of Sarah that the Pharaoh was kind to Abraham. It's for the benefit of the potential 50 righteous people that he might not destroy Sodom. So it's not because of, because there's the other way to think about that. It's like, well, I'm gonna take away your whatever because you've done something wrong. I mean, we're going to put you in jail because, or for the sake of your wrongdoing, you got to go to jail. Though that's not, on the surface, it's not a benefit. It's not meant to be a benefit necessarily. It's meant to be a punishment. So you could have a negative for the cause of, or for the benefit, I mean, for because of this, something bad's going to happen. But when it says for the sake of, all these examples are for the benefit of. So it makes me question, should we look at Genesis 8 as a benefit here? So he will never curse the ground again for the benefit of man. Now, what that would mean is that the flood came. Because that's what the context is. The cursing of the ground was the flood, because the flood destroyed the earth, right? So it would mean that the flood was given for the benefit of man. Is everybody seeing that? So what he's saying is, what he's saying in his head is that, okay, I'm done hurting my earth to help man. Is a benefit for man. And then if we're going to take this way, how does that affect how we look at Genesis 3? That this cursing of the ground because of Adam, maybe this cursing of the ground was for the benefit of Adam. Yes, it was it's a result of him eating of the tree, but the guy's like, oh man, I got to curse the ground now. You know, to benefit man, my highest creature. Just a thought. Go ahead. You had something?
Yeah. Everything that is a curse is a blessing when it's received from the Lord. It's only a curse when it's received when it's rejected, and you will not receive it as from the Lord. So
I get that. I don't think that's exactly what I'm saying here, though, because in my other examples, there's no curse involved. It's just a benefit. But go ahead.
On the second there, in saying benefit, could it be it is not something that is deserved? The benefit, the good that is going to come from this is not deserved.
Sure. I mean, yeah, but my point there about the cursing is that, first of all, the benefactor and none of these was the ones getting the curse. The benefactor, if we go with this theme, and we go through it with Genesis 3 and 8 and then on, then the benefactor was Adam, but the curse, getting the curse, was the ground. So it wasn't like Adam, it wasn't that the curse was on the benefactor. That wasn't the case. So that's where I tease them apart. So, as I'm not saying that a curse cannot lead to benefit, even if it's on the one getting cursed per se. Depends on how you use the word cursed, I guess. Anyway, it was just very interesting to me. So as we read this,
Noah was the benefactor, but those that died and the earth also were cursed with the flood. But Noah was the benefactor.
Well, the benefactor is man, it says. It's the Ha-Adam, which is a lot of times mankind. And so although many of mankind were destroyed, mankind in general was preserved through Noah. So Noah was benefited, but kind of secondarily. I mean, He was a means to get mankind to receive a benefit. Yeah, he did get a benefit, but it was. Well, him and his sons were mankind, but yeah, I mean his seed, his genetics, sure, sure.
So I mean, the same sense of Adam.
Adam was mankind. Yeah, right.
Same idea there.
Yeah.
And I see this also.
But in a personal way, you know, he personally wasn't. God could have used any. He could have chosen any. He could have given grace to anyone to be this righteous person. So it wasn't Noah per se. That's all I'm getting at. It's like,
no, but he was a benefactor. He didn't deserve it. He was a benefactor.
He was a benefactor for sure. I don't know if I'd say the benefactor. I like to say mankind was the benefactor, but go ahead.
Oh, no.
I mean, unless, I don't want to cut you off. I thought that was.
That I see also, if I'm understanding what you're trying to explain here, I would also see that with Christ. And the redeemed. Christ was the one that was cursed, and the redeemed are the benefactor of him being cursed.
Yeah, I suppose so.
I was going to say the English translation almost seems to imply that the benefactor is everybody as it continues to go on, although man's heart's evil all the time. It's like he's talking about that group. You know, it kind of reads to me in the English. Like he immediately says, although they're evil, you know.
Yeah, I think fundamentally, what it's saying right here is, God's like, okay, I'm not gonna curse my earth, my ground, my creation, anymore, for the sake of man. Even though I know his heart is still evil, even though he knows that, that's the way I read it. That's the simplest way I can put it forward.
And that sounds to me different than what you were saying before.
Really?
Yeah.
No more am I going to curse the ground for the benefit of Adam, for the benefit of mankind, even though I know he's not. This isn't going to make him perfect. Now I'm speaking in like ideas instead of like, you know, the exact words here. But that's the idea I get from this. I'm not sure that's different than what I said before, but oh, okay, okay, okay. So that's God's inside his head, apparently, if he has a head, in his heart, inside himself. He's saying, okay, I'm not doing that again. I'm not. The ground's not going to be my means to do this again. Yeah.
It seems to me that, and I've seen this somewhere, and I cannot. This is to the phrase for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. It seems to be saying to me that remember Noah's righteousness was in comparison to his generation or the people, all the people that were alive on the earth. His goodness was not complete. He was totally depraved just as we are.
Yeah.
But his good, the reason that God would no longer send a flood is because there will be people who will walk with God and yet we know it's true of everybody that the man's heart is evil from his youth. I don't know. I seem to think that.
Yeah, I mean, I've never, like, that's great that you said that, because to me, I don't struggle with the idea that Noah was righteous, but he was still sinful. And I think some people do.
He had a sinful nature.
Well, yeah. I mean, so, I mean, like I said, I just like, yeah, that's just the way it is. I mean, But some people have a problem with that. Some people, like when it says he was blameless, they think that equates with sinless. And that's not the same thing. So I mean, I just accept that as, yeah, that's just the way it is. But it's good to point out, because not everybody gets that point, that blamelessness and righteousness are not the same thing as sinlessness. So, like, in fact, there are those that make the case or the position out that righteousness is more about one's, it's not about right doing. It's not like you're more righteous when you do more right doing. But righteousness is about where your loyalty is pointed. What God are you, do you believe is the Most High God? Where is your faith? What God is your faith in? What do you believe? Who do you believe is God? Like, in the sense of, so it's more about, like, so in that case, it would be because Noah was righteous because he believed in Yahweh as the one true God. I think the same phraseology is going to occur when we start talking about Abraham later, too, or similar phraseology. No, yeah, it's same, but similar. You got something?
Yeah, and that's because, in my opinion, watching my circle growing up, that would be because people believe that people were saved differently in the Old Testament than the New Testament. Saved by works. Work salvation versus by faith. And no matter what Romans says about Abraham, though he was righteous and whatnot, he is the father of faith. Those that believe what God has said. This is where righteousness comes from. And particularly in the Old Testament, when you see righteousness, blameless, yes, it is speaking of their standing before God, not who they themselves are. It is them, just like you and I. I am not sinless.
Right.
I am blameless, and
right.
I am righteous.
Yeah.
I'm a saint, but not by my works.
Right.
By the words of Jesus Christ.
Right.
Same thing for Noah,
same thing for Paul, same thing for every human that's ever walked who God, you know.
Hebrews 11, anyway? And that's the whole thing that is saying there,
right.
By faith.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so there's number one, a sort of a promise to himself, right? Number one. Number two. And number two is like number one in a sense, because it says nor, or that's one choice of words there. Nor will I again anymore destroy everything living, or every living thing, as I have done. So, to me, when it says nor, first of all, let's see my notes here. So, if I'm saying something about, this is like grammar 101. If you're saying, I am not going to go to the store, nor, you know, you that's like when you choose to use nor or there, nor is your negative. Or is your positive, in a sense. It's like, I'm not going to do this, nor am I going to do this. When you say nor, you shouldn't say I'm not going to do this or do this if you're not going to do the second thing. Does that make sense? You should say, I'm going to go to the store or I'm going to the ball game. That means you might go to either one. I'm not going to go to the store, nor am I going to the ball game. You're going to neither one of them. If you say, I'm not going here or I'm going here, that's grammatically incoherent in English, just so you know. So, the nor here is important in that respect. This means that nor am I going to do this. So, this is not going to happen either. This is what he's fixing to say. So, nor will I again anymore destroy. All right. Never again, then. Because the first one is, I never again will do this. Nor, and they just leave out, will I ever. But it's got implied in there, nor will I again, ever, the again is kind of the ever there, never again destroy every, or that word means the whole of life. Now, did he destroy the whole of life in the flood? Technically not, because of Noah and the and the animals, everything in the ark, right? So we got to understand this in the context of the verbiage. So what? So he'll never again destroy the whole of every living thing, meaning all of every living, every kind of every living thing. So the next tricky spot is as I have done. Now, some want to say that that means he'll never do it by water again, but leaves the door open to do it by other means again. Now, I would like to put forward that the word there should not be, it should not refer to the type of destruction, but the destruction as the action itself. It should not be, I'll never destroy all of life like I did, like using water, like that. But I'll do it in another way. It should be, I will never again do that which I did bring about. So this would indicate this is not limited. This promise is not limited to simply water destruction. Flood, you know, destroying everything by water again. This is a promise never to destroy all life again, ever. And I think part of that gets emphasized or upheld in the next verse, because it says there, while ever the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night, not shall cease. Okay, so based on the previous two promises going into this statement, and I want to say that the first four words, while ever remains the earth, are the key for this, because I'm gonna look at each one of those words, and I think I'll be able to show you. I don't really like the way that's rendered, but I think I can show you why. But as a whole, if you look at the verse in English, while ever the earth remains, and it talks, the word while there, that first word of the sentence, is an adverb. And an adverb always modifies a verb. And the only verb in the whole sentence is the verb to cease. And that's, now, in my English right here, it's the very last word. So, but you got to remember, it's an adverb, so it's got to modify a verb. So what that, to me, says that all these seed time and harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, day and night, those are all modifiers of something. Or what I mean by a modifier is they all refer to one thing. And here, the thing they refer to is the earth. So when it says that word, the earth, that's the word that means the earth as opposed to the heavens. That makes sense? So it means more really than just our globe. It means everything that's not in the heavens. Okay, what? So I guess, I mean, our globe and what's on it is the earth. So the whole of the earth. And when it talks about, then it talks about these things that we see as relative to the earth. Seed time and harvest, cold and heat, day and night. Those are all relative, and they're related to the earth. And what, so, you know, the earth has a day and a night because of the way God set up the celestial. The earth has summers and winters. And then heat and cold is just another kind of, you know, sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold. So all that, which is the big chunk of the sentence, you could kind of just take it out and set it over here and say, those are just describing the earth. And if you take those out mentally and then you read the verse, it's like, while ever remains the earth, naught shall cease. See, I just took all those out because those are all talking about the earth itself. And now our adverb is a lot closer to our verb. And that word while is means it's that it's I didn't look to see if it was the exact same word, but we had a word earlier that meant continually. Remember we talked about it? I talked about the circle. A circle is like forever. If you ever get started on it, you really don't have a stopping point. This is that same continuous. So when it says while, it means as it continues. In a continual nature. Now the next word, ever, actually it means each, any, the totality of, and the whole of. Now to me, when I read the word ever there, I don't get that. I don't really get that flavor ever. The whole. So it's almost like as continues the whole, as continues the totality. And the next word, remains. So when I read it with the word remains in there, that gives me the idea that one day it won't be here. This idea, as long as it remains, while ever it remains, well, that just means that the only reason that makes any sense is if there might be a time when it's not remaining. But that word remains there, that's the word yom. From like the first, it was the first day, it was the first yom, it was the second yom in the creation week. It's the word day. Or it's the word day that's rendered day there, but it's really bigger than day. It means a time frame in general, just in generality. It means a time frame. Many, many times it's rendered as day because it's talking about a 24-hour time frame. So we call it a day. Sometimes it's rendered. Sometimes it's meant a season or a group of years. The day of so and so, like some king, like in the days of Hezekiah. I'm not sure if that word is actually used. I didn't look that up, but that's the idea behind it. In the days of Hezekiah. Well, that means in his lifespan. So that word yom, it means a time frame. Okay. Now, I'm thinking about the word remains. So, okay, the time frame. But if it talks about the whole of a time frame, in a time frame that continues, this continual time frame, so if you'll give me the privilege, I will simply give you, I'll say that same phrase with some different, potentially different but appropriate words. And I'm going to move my verb up next to my adverb so it sounds better in English. If I do that, it reads, continues without ceasing. There's that, the verb, adverb. Continually without ceasing. The whole, that's the word ever, the whole. Continues without ceasing. The whole of time, the earth. So as long as time remains, earth remains. That's basically what this is saying. So as long as time remains, as long as there's continually, without ceasing, the whole of time, the earth will, and then all those modifiers, continually without ceasing, the whole of time, the earth will have seed time and harvest, have heat and cold, have summer and winter, have night and day. It's a promise from God, in contrast to the flood, that the seasons, the regularity, the rhythms of the earth will go on as long as time remains.
So the earth is not going to freeze and it's not going to burn.
Right, it's not going to freeze, burn.
Where does that leave the climate control people?
I'm cold.
Yeah. It doesn't mean the earth won't get warmer. It doesn't mean it won't get colder than it is right now. So it doesn't mean there won't be climate change. What it means is that the sky is falling penny hen is improper for a believer from because of this right here.
That's right.
So we have here, got these two things that God says in his mind that he's decided they're never going to happen again. And I think that you can just logically flow from that because of that. He says, verse 22, because I'm never going to destroy mankind again, never going to use the earth as my tool to help mankind again. He's benefited mankind by being rough on the earth, basically. He's saying, I'm not going to do that again. So you don't have to worry about seed time, harvest, hot, cold, all those rhythms of the earth are not going to cease again. And they will continue for as long as time continues. Which is like saying they'll continue forevermore. So, does this mean that God is saying that life will continue forever on the earth? Because there's a lot of verses that people like talk about there being this end of all things. And I'm not going to like go into a big apologetic about that. I'm going to let y'all work through that if you want to, your own. And what I would say, there's a few verses to consider here. The first is Ecclesiastes 1:4. Somebody please read that one. And instead of getting that one, there's Psalm 93:1. Psalm 104:5, and 1 Chronicles 16:30. Those are the verses I want to read. Ecclesiastes 1:4.
I got it.
Whoa, somebody's already said it. Didn't somebody already say they had it? Oh, okay, my bad. Go ahead.
A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever.
Earth remains forever. Next. Psalm 93:1.
The Lord reigneth. He is clothed with majesty. The Lord is clothed with strength. Within he hath girded himself. The world also is established. The world also is established, that it cannot be moved.
Psalm 104:5.
Who laid the foundations of the earth, that it should not be removed forever.
In 1 Chronicles 16:30.
I got it. Fear before him, all the earth. The world also shall be stable, that it be not moved.
So, what I did was I did a little search. I said, I want all the verses that talk about the, what did I use? Maybe it's still up here. Huh?
Google AI.
I did not use the AI. I just used somebody a compilation versus thing. I don't have it up here anymore. Can't remember exactly what I did. Something about end of the earth, maybe. End of the earth, I think is the phrase I used. And I just started reading them all. And literally that's where I found these four. But I would say, as you evaluate this idea, number one, consider the context of your verses, especially if it uses the phrase last days, and look at the context to try to figure out, what's that talking about? If that's maybe talking about the end of the eon in AD 70. And number two, the ends of the earth frequently, in the context, it means a way to describe meaning something happening amongst all the earth, from one end of the earth to the other. It's just a It's a descriptor for it to be talking about from the, you know, he came from the ends. He searched out the ends of the earth. Well, what that means is everywhere that he could possibly search on the earth. That's just another phrase there. And then lastly, universe that's found in Revelation, hold it really loosely as a earth not lasting verse. So to review here, Noah pleased God with his offering. God had decided two things. One, never to dishonor the earth for the benefit of man or for man. Two, to never destroy all life again. And God promised the earth that the earth and its rhythms would never cease. So for us, that if you can walk in faith, if you can believe this, then you can walk in faith that God will provide for the needs, for all your needs and for all our needs without fear.